thank you again to Whit and to everybody who's come for welcoming me so graciously. It's truly an honor to be able...
Sure.
It's truly an honor to be here. Certainly very appreciative and gracious for this opportunity. Tehillim is a fascinating sefer, and it's used in fascinating ways. When somebody's sick, unfortunately, if somebody is in a time of distress, so they personally may call out to Hashem, using Tehillim as a vehicle through which they reach Hashem, hoping that their tefillos will be answered. Oftentimes, if somebody is in a bad situation, not only the person himself or herself will call out with Tehillim, but the community or friends and family will come together for Tehillim gatherings. Unfortunately, they're all too common because of the many tzaras we have. But fortunately, we have wonderful communities and such a sense of connection with one another that we do come together. And it's through this Tehillim that we find our way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in order to ask some of the most basic and deepest emotional requests that we have from Hashem. And the question is, how does this work? And why does this work? We don't pick a different sefer from Tanakh. We don't say tefillah. We don't daven per se. We recite psukim. Sometimes people aren't even paying attention to the words they're saying. One could counter, unfortunately, in davening, that could be the case as well. But even in Tehillim, there are oftentimes many of the psukim that don't seem to be expressing any emotion or any request. Yet we come together and we say Tehillim. It's a minhag that is widespread throughout the entire Klal Yisrael. And today's day and age, it's a minhag which is a custom that we adhere to and is advocated. It's interesting and oftentimes a little eye-opening to see that this wasn't always the case. In fact, there's some opponents to saying Tehillim when somebody is sick. If we open up a Rambam, not such an obscure source, but the Rambam tells us that it is prohibited to say Tehillim for somebody who's sick. It is prohibited for a sick person to recite Tehillim in order to get better. Where is the Rambam coming from? And what is he expressing? The Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Tesvav, tells us, I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, it is aser to heal oneself or another with Torah. You cannot use Torah for medicinal purposes. It's aser. The Gemara asks, if that's the case, we know Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would recite certain psukim before he went to sleep in order to protect himself, which is something that is done by most people, Kriya Shema Al Mita. In addition to just Shema, which is powerful in and of itself, many people, if not most, have the custom to recite various psukim, and they're doing it for protection through the night. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the same person who tells us that it's prohibited to use Torah to heal, was one of the types of people, was a person who used these psukim to protect himself. To which the Gemara responds, Lahage and Shiny. If it's for protection, it's okay. It's only once one is sick and they need to get better that it's prohibited to recite Tehillim, according to this Gemara, apparently. And we'll discuss where our minhag comes from. The Rambam reads this Gemara exactly the way I just presented it. And in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph, he tells us that if somebody reads psukim in order to get better, or in order to heal somebody else, that the merits, very important, the merits of the psukim will stand up and provide healing services, so to speak, or because of these merits, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will now heal this individual. The Rambam uses some very strong language. Lo dai lahen shehein b'chach gavarim u'menachshim. It's not enough that they're in violation of two biblical commandments, both pertaining to superstitious activities. Elashem Bechal HaKofrim B'Torah. They're included in those who deny the entire Torah. Why? Shein Osen Dibrei Torah Fusguf. They're using the Torah to heal the physical body. Ve'enan Ela Riflus Nefashis. Torah is not for healing a physical body. It's for healing the soul. Avo HaBarisha Kara P'sukin. O Mizmor Mitilim. The Rambam specifically states Tehillim. If somebody's healthy and he says Tehillim, or any other pasuk for that matter, Kadesha Tagin loves Huskriyasan, that the merits should stand on this person's behalf to protect, that's fine. Harezim. Clearly the Rambam would not be happy with the widespread minhag. And it's fascinating because it's not often that we find such a mainstream rabbinic authority of his time period, the Rambam, one of the pillars of halacha, that he is not only in disagreement with a practice that we have, that is widespread, but he says that partaking of this practice is kfirah. It's a denial of the Torah. Some of the strongest language possible to be used. But it seems that the Rambam is coming from that Gemara that we cited. The Rambam is coming from the Gemara that said it's usur to use Torah for medicinal purposes. Perhaps you'll argue there's a very big difference in the way we use Tehillim and in what the Rambam is referring to. The Rambam says that if you say Tehillim, he did say Tehillim specifically, or any other pasuk, in order that the merit of saying that pasuk, or learning that Torah, or saying that kapitel, should stand and allow for a healing, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should heal an individual, that's what's prohibited. What if I say it like a tefillah? What if I say it as if I'm davening it? What if I put myself in David HaMelech's shoes? What if I see myself in distress? And when I say Shir HaMalos Mimamakim Kirasicha Hashem, that a song of ascents, Hashem, I'm calling out from the depths of my heart, the depths that I'm relegated to at this point in time in my life because of whatever tzara I'm dealing with. What if I put myself in David's shoes and express myself as a tefillah? Presumably that would be okay. The problem is, that's not what we do. If you look, there's a yiratzim that many say prior to reciting Tehillim. It's found in most Siddurim and Sifrei Tehillim before the Tehillim section. And it says specifically throughout the entire Tefillah that the zechus, the merits of these psukim, the merits of this recitation of this kapitel, of these holy words and their nuances and the letters and all these other different phrases that are used in this Yehi Ratzon, they should stand and they should help. Perhaps you'll counter, well, maybe that tefillah isn't talking about for sick people. Remember, the Rambam only took issue if one is saying Tehillim because somebody's sick. To protect, he had no problems with. To save somebody else from a different sorrow, perhaps there was no problem. The problem with that is if you look at the end of Tefillah, after Tehillim, which many people recite, and is found in any Siddur, it specifically says, and the zechus of the psukim that we just read should stand as a testament and a merit for the sick person, add in the sick person's name, to be healed. So we see that our practice is in fact not focused on tefillah. It's focused on zechus. And the truth is, looking at many kapitlach, you'll find that that has to be the case. La'matzeach l'vnei korach mizmor. What tefillah did I just say? To the conductor, a mizmor, a psalm that was authored by the b'nei korach. I didn't daven. I just had an introduction. There are many such phrases. Some, perhaps, from more commonly read Kapitlos Tehillim when people are sick. V'ol v'amun v'amolik v'lashosim yoshe etzor. A list of enemies that we battled. A list of formidable foes that were presenting a tremendous challenge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us from them. We say who they are. What tefillah did I say in that pasuk? I didn't. It's obvious that through my Tehillim, I'm saying holy words, which is how it's expressed in the tefillahs as we saw the Yiratzon prior to and post Tehillim. That I want those merits to stand and be successful at convincing Hashem, if you will, or requesting of Hashem to now heal the sick individual that we are davening for or having a Tehillim. The truth is, the reason why our minhag stands is because we don't paskin like the Rambam. That is the Rambam's opinion, what we just mentioned. And yes, the Rambam would have a problem with our custom. The Rambam is what's known as a das yachid in these matters. The Rambam is the sole opinion with a wide range of rabbinic thought against it. The Rambam had to read that Gemara that I initially quoted in the fashion he did because of another greater argument that he has with pretty much most of the Rishon, with the Ramban and the Rashba and Rashi and the Ibn Ezra and the Sefer HaIbur and the Trumas HaDeshim, and we could pile on more and more and more and more. What's his argument? The Rambam is known as being very much of a rationalist. He didn't discuss or he didn't believe in a lot of the supernatural phenomena that many of the other Rishonim did and what appears to be expressed in many passages in Shas. The Rambam, when he would read these passages, would either read them allegorically or assume that they were an opinion of a Das Yachid again. It didn't express the thought of all of Chazal. It was just one opinion. And he did not use these authorities found in the Gemara to say what the halacha would be. He thought it was somewhat on the fringe, if you will, not taken the halacha. Or even, it was never meant to be taken halachically, it was only meant to be allegorical. Because of that, when the Rambam discusses the prohibitions of various superstitions, he's backed into a corner many times. Because sometimes the Gemara seems to be talking about if you did a superstition and it worked, then you violated the prohibition. The Rambam can't have such a thing. He doesn't believe they can ever work. So if part of the prohibition is the success of something that cannot work, the Rambam can't read those Gemaras in that fashion. And he's oftentimes forced to say it's just the act of doing that. Now when we look at this halacha, in the Rambam, first he told us that reading psukim is, even for the schus of them, is a problem. But first, before he talked about schus, he said reading psukim is a superstitious activity. He's equating it not first with a person who's reading them for schus. It's an incantation. There are many in Shas, you can look in the Seches Gittin, in Shabbos, many other places, that if somebody's sick, there were certain specific incantations that they would say to be healed. Many of them have nothing to do with Torah, and many of them don't have anything to do with logic. Rashi, in many of these places, says, don't try to understand what this incantation, this gibberish statement that a person should say if he has this disease, is saying, because it doesn't make sense. It's a magical expression that can be used for healing. So if one uses Tehillim as that, not schus, just for a magical way to heal himself, that's the Rambam says, it's not enough. It's not enough that this person used it as a superstition. It's not enough that they've violated the biblical commandments. But even if you use it as a schus, it's asur. Why? Because the Rambam has to read Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement. Let me ask you. If you hold that any superstitious activity is prohibited, and you come to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement that it's usher to heal yourself with Torah, Can you say he's referring to a superstitious activity? No, because there's a biblical commandment that tells me I can't be superstitious. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is adding something that I didn't know. If just saying an incantation is prohibited, and that's a given, before I even start discussing Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's statement, then he can't be telling me it's prohibited to say Tehillim as a magic potion. Because it's already prohibited, I don't need him to say that. So the Rambam is now forced to say that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is talking even when you used it for a zchus, even when you used it for a merit. Because if not, he's not adding anything we didn't know. So the Rambam has to learn that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi prohibits also the strapos b'divrei Torah means even when you're using it for merits. But the Rashba and the Ramban and all the other Rishonim, since they do not prohibit such superstitious activities, therefore, if somebody were to read Pesukim in a superstitious fashion, would we know it from the Chumash? No. It's not prohibited. That's what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is talking about. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is talking about if one recites a pasuk from Tehillim as if he would say abracadabra, hocus pocus. That's prohibited. Asur l'Yisraelos b'divrei Torah. What about if it's for a zchus? What about if it's for a merit? There's no precedent, there's no legal precedent in all of the Talmud to tell me, from the perspective of these great Rishonim, that that's prohibited. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch paskens like all these other Rishonim, not like the Rambam. In Yerodei Kofayin Ches, in Yerodei Kofayin Tes. That's where Amina comes from. To the point that there's an old sefer, the Rashba even seems to quote it, so it's very old, called Shimush Tehillim. And it's a sefer that the Rishonim had, obviously that the Rambam would disagree with, that delineates what each capital of Tehillim is good for. Each capital of Tehillim, if you're in this type of etzara, say this. If you're in that type of etzara, say the other. We see a very old tradition for our custom, and it's reflected both in the vast majority of the halachic authorities and also in the contemporary halachic practice. But the question now is, we see from our tefillos with Tehillim, we see based on the way we've just expressed the underlying sugya with Tehillim, we understand that we're not reading it as a tefillah. Tehillim is being read not as prayer. It can't be. We've cited psukim that demonstrate that's not how it is. But it's for the merit of reciting Tehillim. Why Tehillim? Once I'm not dealing with putting myself in David HaMelech's shoes to express my tefillos, to express my prayer, why not learn Sefer Bereishis? Why not learn Koheles? Why are we picking Tehillim? Tehillim is a very unique sefer in that it's written by one person compiled from 10 different people. David HaMelech took the writings of 9 other people plus those of his own, 10 people, and he created a book called Tehillim. This book of Tehillim, why 10 people? Other books, the Navi who wrote it is the main author, and sometimes we find that if the Navi died prematurely before he was able to write his own Sefer down, because generally he was killed, so his successor would finish off the last chapters, or whatever it would be. We don't find this comprehensive likut, compilation, of so many different authors that the author never even tried to write it down for himself. Adam, we don't find, wrote down these kapitlach that he wrote. Moshe, Bnei Korach, we know they composed them, but we don't know why they didn't write them. Let's also focus on the fact David HaMelech is the one who wrote it. The one who finally put it down was the king from whom the dynasty of an everlasting dynasty, with Mashiach hopefully soon coming, is our king. There have been other kings in Klal Yisrael, Shaul and his son. But all the other dynasties, Yeravam ben Nevat, they've all perished. They're not coming back. The whole family was eradicated after their kingdom fell to whoever their enemy was. David HaMelech, even after the Churban Bayis Rishon, we wait for his child to come back and save us. His dynasty is going to be the one that lasts. He is the true sense of what it means to be our king, because he has the dynasty that lasts eternally. What does it mean to be a king? You rule over people. That could be a tyrant. What does it mean to be a king? A melech, not a Moshe. The difference between a melech and a Moshe, which is oftentimes expressed, usually during Rosh Hashanah time in many shiurim, is that a melech represents the people. A melech is a person who has the needs of the people at heart. He's a person that the people take pride in and recognize that he's leading them in order for society, for them all to come together and be able to exist appropriately. A Moshe is somebody who is enforcing his reign on other people. He's forcing them to do things for his own benefit. High taxes, and he can demonstrate his power, he can live a life of luxury. Not really the man of the people, but the man for himself. The word melech demonstrates this, because every letter in the Aleph Beis is found somewhere in the Torah. The Torah, the world, they're all comprised of ideas that are expressed in the language written by Aleph Beis, Lashon HaKodesh, the language through which Hashem created this world. Every Jew is expressed as a letter in the Torah. Just like there were 600,000 Jews at Har Sinai, so too, metaphorically, there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Every Jew leaves their mark on the Torah. And when I look at the Aleph Beis, and I want to know what's the center of the Aleph Beis, what unites the entire Aleph Beis, what's bringing everybody together, the answer is the Melech. And the reason for that is, there are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. 22 divided in half, you're not going to have a middle letter. You'll have two letters. But if you then also add the five letters, the Mem, the Nun, the Tzadi, the Pei, and the Chaf, that when they are at the end of a word, change their shape. The Mem, instead of being open, becomes closed. The Nun becomes very long. All those five letters, when you include those at the end of the Aleph Beis, which is oftentimes done, in the Aleph Beis, then, now you take the two letters that were straddling the middle of the Aleph Beis without the five, because that's one way to express it. And you take the one letter that is the middle of the Aleph Beis, because 27 does have a middle. And those three letters spell Melech. It spells the king. The Melech unites the people. The Melech brings them together. He's not having his own personality. He's not subjugating them in a way just so that he can have a palace and riches and wealth and kavod. He's making sure that society is working with people getting along, with the rule of law implemented for them, not for him. And as the Maharal expresses, this is why the king needs a crown. The Moshe, the tyrant, also wears a crown. For him, it's to display his glory. Look what I have. All these gems, this fancy gold, silver, whatever, platinum, who knows what metals were used in his fancy crown. The Melech needs a crown because if he wouldn't, you can't discern who he is. He's the epitome of somebody who doesn't have a sense of self. He's the complete civil servant. He's the person who has dedicated his life for the community and not for himself. So to distinguish who that person is, you need a defining feature raised on his head to show you that's the Melech. Because if not, he'd be almost invisible. That is David HaMelech. And he's the one who authored Tehillim in the end. Not because Adam got killed, not because Moshe got killed, but because Tehillim expresses human emotion. It expresses the human coming close to Hashem. And even though we're not using it as tefillah, when we call out to Hashem in our Tehillim gatherings, we are saying we are people. And this is hitting the raw emotion that dwells inside me, and it's bringing that out for me to express myself in Torah to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in one of the most pure and emotional ways that is possible, in one of the most passionate ways that's possible. David HaMelech's life, he had every type of tzara that most people could think of. He was at the highest peaks of what it would be in a person's life for most. He was a king. He ruled over the people at times of relative quiet and peace and riches. And at other times he was being persecuted. First, his own brothers and father seemed to have cast him away to the fields. For whatever reason, he wasn't accepted in the family. Finally, when he's anointed king, the current Melech, Shaul, starts chasing after him. And he's on the run. He's having a very difficult life. Two of his own sons led rebellions against him. His own son. Twice. And one of those sons perished when they suppressed the rebellion. Something very difficult that David HaMelech does express himself with in Tehillim. Showing that anguish, both for being kicked out and for the loss of that son. And as much as his son rose up against him, it's still his son. And he was still very pained to see his demise. He is everything. Being a regular peasant, before he was the king, shepherd out in the fields, to being the king, ruling over Klal Yisrael. You name it, the wide range of human emotion can be found in David HaMelech. And therefore he, taking not only from his own experience, because that may be specific to his time period, takes from many different authors, and makes sure to express all of humanity with many different authors, because no one person, no matter how much they try, can truly understand everybody. Because everybody has different situations, and everybody is created somewhat differently and responds and reacts differently. To have Tehillim, to have a book that expresses humanity, you need it to be compiled from many different authors. 10, oftentimes expressed, and Maharal uses this many times as well, seems this way from Mishnah and Avos as well, as the epitome of a number that represents completion. When you count, 10 starts the next level of tens. We have 10 fingers, 10 toes, 10 dibros, 10 commandments, 10 sayings that Hashem created the world in. All these things show something complete. The 10 commandments, nichlal in them, the entire Torah. The 10 sayings that Hashem used to create the world, the entire universe, is expressed in 10 steps. 10 people composed Tehillim. But David HaMelech wrote them down because he was the Melech, the quintessential Melech. So he's taking from all these different people and he's putting it down on paper. The Torah is in 5 books. Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Midbar, and Devar. And that is the expression, the purest expression of Hashem directly talking to man. Word for word, the Nevi'im from Yeshua and on do not express word for word what Hashem said. The Navi had a vision and he wrote it down in his own words with divine inspiration. Word for word, the Torah, the 5 books of Moshe Rabbeinu, are from Hashem. It's the person hearing from Hashem. It's Hashem communicating to us. And the one book that expresses humanity talking back to Hashem in an emotional, passionate state is Tehillim, which is also divided into five books. Tehillim, the longest kapitel, is Kuf Yotes. There are 176 psukim in Kuf Yotes. The longest parasha in the Torah is Parashas Naso, 176 psukim. But the prime difference, which is what we've been saying, is that the Torah was given word for word from Hashem with the ultimate nevuah. A nevuah that nobody ever has or ever will attain. Moshe Rabbeinu achieved prophecy on a level that is impossible to have, other than for him. It's the expression of Hashem. Tehillim is not in Nevi'im. Look in the Tanakh. Look where it's relegated to. It's not Nevi'im. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu himself is one of the authors of part of Tehillim, Tefillah LeMoshe, Yeshua Elokim. But those statements were not written with that level of nevuah. It's in Ksuvim. Ksuvim aren't even prophecy. It's not with Yoshua. It's not with Treyasar. It's in Ksuvim. Ksuvim are just divinely inspired. Just as, not to belittle it, just relative to Chamishei Chumshei Torah or to the Nevi'im. Ksuvim are written in a non-prophetic state. Prophecy, in whatever level it is, has the human losing some control, seeing a vision, and receiving a message. Ksuvim, the person is in full control. And through divine inspiration, Ruach HaKodesh, his pen is somewhat guided. His tongue speaks the correct words so eloquently, but it's his own expression, just with a little guidance from Hashem. Hashem is, with Vayruach HaKodesh, using the person and using the capabilities of the person and the expression of the person, and Hashem is guiding that person to make sure that he's using the correct words to make sure his thought is given over to humanity. Tehillim is in Ksuvim. Not because it was only written by low-level people relative to Moshe Rabbeinu, certainly people with that level of Ruach HaKodesh are higher than the masses of humanity, because Moshe Rabbeinu was in Tehillim. Tehillim is in Ksuvim because it's that method of inspiration that wants to be expressed, that Hashem wants expressed from the human. And that's why we pick this Sefer. Because we're saying we want to learn Torah as a zchus, not as a prayer. As a zchus for the person for whom we're davening on their behalf. But you know what? If I'm going to pick a Sefer, I'm going to pick Tehillim. Because it expresses being human. Let's look at the Rambam once again, which is why I brought it in the beginning, not just for the eye-opening effect that there's a rishon of such stature that disagrees with our practice. The Rambam writes, once again, because he had to, in the way he learns the sugya, but not taken in the halachic sense. He writes that the Torah is supposed to be a healing of the soul, not a healing of the guf. Tehillim, as part of Torah, is meant to heal the soul. As a byproduct, it also heals the guf. The zechuyos that we want to show that we're becoming complete. All the laws in the Torah and the merits of learning Torah perfect the human that's doing the mitzvos and that is learning the Torah. Every single one of them. But Tehillim is perfecting the human in a way that displays that he or she is human. It's perfecting the emotional sense of the human. The Rambam now disagrees and says, therefore that's all it can be. The Rashba, the Ramban, the Shumas Hadashim, etc. They say, you're correct. That may be the focus of the Torah. But it's not prohibited to use it for a merit. So when we pick our merits, when we pick Tehillim, we say, you know what we're going to pick? We're going to pick this Sefer specifically. Because it's our Torah, it's our five books. It's not the five books from Hashem. It's the five books of humanity going to Hashem. And we're going to perfect that element of us calling out to Hashem, which is what needs perfection at a time when we're in a tzar, which is what we're focused on. To say, call out to Hashem. Recognize your dependence on Hashem. Recognize how you're in His hands. And recognize the need to pour out your heart completely and passionately. Of Tehillim, we find that many of these psalms were used in the Beis HaMikdash. Once again, not from Sefer Bereishis, Shmos, Amos, whatever it would be, Yehoshua, any of the other Chavdalot Sfarim. Why was it the songs that David HaMelech wrote that were used when the Karbanos were being brought in the Beis HaMikdash? The Levim would stand on a duchen, they would stand on a platform in the Holy Temple, and while the Karbanos were being performed by the Kohanim, the Levim would call out in song, and they would recite the words of Tehillim. And the answer is, the Karban may be commanded from Hashem, as is the shir, as is the song, but it's been brought from us to Hashem. And therefore the complement to the Karban which is the physical action, the calling out to Hashem, the song, which oftentimes song, shir, and shira evoke some of the purest and deepest of human emotion. That happens from Tehillim. That happens not only from Tehillim, but specifically from the ones that David HaMelech personally composed, because he's the Melech. David HaMelech and his lineage are the only ones who are allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody else must stand. There's a debate amongst the Rishonim if the Kohanim were allowed to sit while they ate from the Karbanos, just to show the grandeur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it shows royalty and a sense of being regal to be able to sit and recline when you eat. That's debated. But even their sitting isn't because they want to relax. David HaMelech is the only one who's able, and his descendants from Malchus Beis David, to sit in the Azar, in the confines of the actual Beis HaMikdash. Because the Beis HaMikdash is humanity's expression to HaKadosh Baruch. We are doing the Avodah. It's not us receiving the Avodah. We don't get anything more out of the Beis HaMikdash. It's all actions from us being taken to HaKadosh Baruch. Our Karbanos, our Shir, you name it. Tefillah. Ki Beisi Beis Tefillah. It's also a place of Tefillah. It's a place where the humans come to connect to Hashem. Hashem connects to the humans through His prophets. He'll send them to the people when necessary. The prophets go out to the people. The people come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash. And since David HaMelech was able to encapsulate that in his Tehillim, since David HaMelech united the people and recognized the people and humanity, he can sit there. He can show that this is the Malchus that's being expressed. It's the Malchus based David. It's the Malchus of humanity coming to serve the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no dimin between those two malchus. The malchus of Kadosh Baruch Hu is different, and nothing, not even malchus based of it, can compare to it in any way whatsoever. But it's reflective of the fact that David HaMelech encapsulated what it means to be human, and the human crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he can sit in a royal throne in the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody else has to stand at attention. The Shir was done by the Levim. The Rama writes a fantastic sefer. I know I've quoted it in the past. It's a sefer that I get a tremendous geschmack out of. So I can't help but cite it, especially if we're talking about things happening in the Beis HaMikdash. The Rama wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'olah. Once again, the Rama is perhaps the pillar of halacha upon which Ashkenazic Jewry stands. The Ramah Rav Moshe Israelis lived in the 15th to 16th century, really, and the Shulchan Aruch had just been written in his lifetime. He actually corresponded with Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, but it reflected the Sephardic opinion. And it's the Shulchan Aruch, it's the set table, so the Ramah put little footnotes, little hagos. Anytime you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says hagah, a footnote. And the print changes from block letters to Rashi script and smaller letters. And that's the Ramah. He just made little footnotes. He called it initially the mappa, the tablecloth, for the table that was set, the Shulchan Aruch. But that made it that now the Shulchan Aruch could be used by Sephardim and Ashkenazim alike. And it made it a universal, not just a Sephardic sefer, and really the pillar of halacha. But the Ashkenazim follow the opinion most often like the Ramah. He's also a great philosopher. Many don't know that. And he wrote a book, the Torah Se'ola. Torah Se'ola is his philosophical work. Gives Musar, gives Chizuk. And in it, he goes through all the nuances of the Beis HaMikdash, both in its dimension and in the service that was conducted in its confines, and shows the symbolism of how the Beis HaMikdash as a structure and the avoda, the service performed in it, is an expression of us, we the people, coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our karbanos. And every small nuance he has detailed there. Shir, what is the song that the Levim sing? Well, first he gives some background. And he says, the world, the universe as we know it, has three parts. The first part is the olam that's completely ruchni, it's completely spiritual. Hashem's will comes through the malachim. And then it's coming from this metaphysical, spiritual realm, and it bridges into this world. And the hashpa, the divine providence that's rained down upon us and makes everything how it's going to be, that comes through the realm of the stars, he says, and then through the stars into the physical realm. The physical realm, that's what we're familiar with. But that's the mazalos. Mazal. The Levim, says the Ramah, express that intermediary stage. Because they connect Hashem with Klal Yisrael. They bring the karbanos to Hashem, half of, not half, but part of Shevet Levi were the Kohanim. They connect us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that fashion. And the Levim, who sing Shir, express the emotion to Hashem. The Kohanim are doing physical actions to serve Hashem, just like we do physical actions to serve Hashem. But if you shake a lulav, if you blow a shofar, you do a physical action to serve Hashem, but there's no heart, there's no emotion, you're missing half of the avodah, if not most of the avodah. Rachman Aliba boy, he wants the heart. Perhaps that's the most important part. So the songs of praise also are part of this bridge, if not the focus of this bridge. And the Levim are, in that way, the bridge between this world and the metaphysical realm. Just like we read in Davening, Hashem opens the windows to let the sun out. We read it on Shabbos, Bokeh, Chaloni, etc. He opens up the different windows, meaning he positions the stars and the sun, however that works, in order to rain upon this world his will. So too the Levim made sure to open and close the doors. That was part of their job in the Beis HaMikdash. They opened the gates, they closed the gates. There was a formal procession. Every time the gates needed to be opened. It wasn't just go open the door. Every morning there were specific ways to open the gates and the whole ceremony, almost parade, in order to show Hashem's grandeur. They open the gates, they close the gates. They open the Hashba from Hashem. How do they also open the Hashba from Hashem? By calling out to Him. They call out saying Tehillim. Saying Tehillim that David HaMelech personally wrote. And they call out to Hashem and they accompany the carbon, the sacrifice that's being brought by their brethren, the Kohanim. And they call out to Hashem and they sing on this platform, expressing what it means to be a human. Expressing what it means to call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Levim do. And that's in the Tehillim that David HaMelech wrote. So, to recap, we have Tehillim, which is a sefer, one of the 24 Sfarim of Tanakh. It's not being used as tefillah. We're not calling out to Hashem as a request. The words found in there, many if not most, when we're davening, or I should say saying Tehillim to Hashem, are not expressing the exact circumstance that we're davening for. For that we have the Yei Ratzon before and after, or Mishaberach before or after. That's the tefillah aspect of it. We're using it as a Torah aspect of it. But it's the book of the Torah that encompasses and has inside it. It's us. It's the people speaking. It's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to man. It's man speaking back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and calling out and expressing a wide range of human emotion. From the emotions of expressing the awe of being God's glory to calling out in moments of distress to expressing thanks for Hashem doing something tremendous for us. A wide range of emotion is found in Tehillim. The Ibn Ezra writes that Kapitul Kuf Lamed Tes encapsulates in it the essence of Tehillim. He says there is no Kapitul like Kuf Lamed Tes in the rest of Tehillim. And he explains why. Kapitul Kuf Lamed Tes discusses how Hashem creates man and how man understands that. And how man understands that everything in his makeup, even the contradictory feelings at times, it's all meant to serve Hashem and to be channeled to serve Hashem. It's man's recognition of what God has done for him. And sometimes man's recognition that he doesn't understand what's going on and saying, I'm in your hands. That encapsulates, from the Ibn Ezra's opinion, that one kapitul, Kuf Lamed Tes, says it all. It's not the five books of Moshe. It's not appropriate, probably, to call it the five books of David. Because although he wrote them, there were 10 different authors. It's the five books of Klal Yisrael. It's the five books of the people who have started since Adam, of humanity, since Adam up to the present. Yes, we can't add any more into Tehillim. The deadline to be part of Tanakh happened in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. We're past that. So all submissions, please keep to yourself. But what it does have is from a duration of time, from Adam till the construction almost of the first Beis HaMikdash, and there are times in Tehillim where it even discusses things that happened after David HaMelech's lifetime. He saw it in Nevuah, says the Radak. He didn't write it in Nevuah. Al-Naros Bavel, sitting by the rivers of Bavel, where we sat and we wept over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash that David HaMelech longed to build and yearned for, that his son built, David HaMelech saw a vision that everything he's yearning for is going to be destroyed. And he writes a powerful kapitel. It hasn't even been built yet. And he's already lamenting its destruction. It has the entire focus of humanity, even past David HaMelech's lifetime. All the different experiences in the five books of the people, not the five books of Moshe, not the five books given to us from Hashem. And this is how we always choose to express ourselves. Does the Rambam disagree? Yes. Does the Rambam say somebody who would act with the custom that we have nowadays is doing an Isser, prohibition? Yes. Should one be stringent like the Rambam? No. Jewish tradition has tremendous respect for the Rambam, and his position on this matter and any matter that he's ever taken stands to be learnt and to be understood and analyzed, and is part of Torah. And as part of our Torah, it's something that we need to keep in our tradition that we know this Shita. But Klal Yisrael, the overwhelming majority of Rishonim, and then all the Poskim, have concluded that no, this is part of our tradition. And it predates the Rambam, this tradition. That Shimush Tehillim, that Sefer that I mentioned, was before the Rambam lived, it was written down. obviously, if the Rambam is citing Tehillim specifically in his halacha, why is he saying that? Because presumably he knew a lot of people were saying Tehillim. It's an old tradition, and it's a tradition that we should keep, and we will keep. And it's a tradition that this people adheres to anytime there's a tzar that we need to call out to Hashem. Because it's how we call out to Hashem, and it's how we see how we are the people who can call out to Hashem.